Becky Liebeltina in for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we review some of 2020's best TV, and we're looking ahead at some anticipated new programming in 2021. First, teachers, instructors, and administrators around the country are trying to figure out how to keep students from cheating during virtual learning. Reports say several colleges and universities have been rocked by cheating scandals. At the University of North Texas, cheating is up 20% from last fall. At Texas State University, it's up 33%. Another report says students in a computer science course at the University of Chicago copied code from each other. And the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, more than 70 cadets were accused of cheating on a math exam. Cheating's also become more of an issue at the high school level, and with the practice generally frowned upon, some parents are saying it might be okay in certain situations. How about you? Where do you stand when it comes to cheating? You can call 800-642-1234. Do you feel like it's always wrong in your book? Or does having access to something like Google or friends make you resourceful? What do you want your kids or kids today to figure out? 800-642-1234. That's the number to call, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. Scott Jasek is an editor at Inside Higher Ed here to talk with us. Welcome back to Central Time, Scott.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Is cheating up overall, or are we just seeing students do it in different ways?
Well, we're definitely seeing students do it in different ways, and it probably is up overall. But I wouldn't assume the worst. Cheating has always been there in higher education, and it's always on the rise, according to some people. If we didn't have an internet, there would be cheating. Remember when, there were the boxes in fraternity houses where you could get old papers or exams. So it's important to remember cheating isn't new. The way people cheat is new. And also with the internet, some people don't know that they're cheating.
That is a really important point, because cheating means different things to different people. And it's not just based on age. I mean, even different teachers handle open book or using your notes differently. And some people would consider that cheating.
Some people would, if you're banned from that. But I'd say cheating, what we really have in our society is a lot of students don't know how to properly credit material that they get online. They don't know the difference between just quoting something and quoting something with attribution. And these are things that you can teach. There's some professors who believe that we should crack down on cheating and strictly enforce the rules. Others, however, say that it's really a time to teach students, teaching is what higher education is about, the difference between cheating and not cheating.
How do you begin to do that? I mean, is there something you can do proactively as professors, as teachers, or do you have to wait until someone has stepped out of line to show them the right way?
I'd say you have to be proactive. The reality is, even if you put on the syllabus that you don't tolerate cheating, many students will cheat, some intentionally and some because they don't know. At the beginning of a course, a professor should talk about what he or she expects from students, what it is to use materials online. Now, this year we've had a particularly bad, instances of cheating, but that's, in part because it's not just they're online, they're home in many cases. And so you didn't have the same relationships with fellow students and professors that you normally do.
We've got Jim from Milwaukee who gave us a call at 800-642-1234. Jim, thanks for joining the conversation.
Thank you. Just a quick comment of my experience. My son goes to a major institution in Texas, and with his courses, he's penalized for not cheating. And what I mean by that is he's in a finance class. The class average for one of the tests was something around the 96%, which is about 20 points higher than the same test given last year before COVID and everything being online. And even though it's pointed out to the professors and the statistics, and they know it's an aberration and they know people probably cheated, the professor really can't do anything about it. So the bottom line is my son is being penalized for not cheating. So he feels pressure to actually, you know, get with the program and do what everybody else is doing. So it is a difficult quandary that these students find themselves in.
Jim, thank you so much for helping us understand what your kids are going through and really bringing up this issue of the pressure to succeed. That is a huge part of cheating, Scott.
Absolutely. I mean, students are under tremendous pressure to get good grades so that they can go to graduate school or get good jobs. But I would ask Jim to just, how do you know that it's cheating? It's not just high grade can be earned. And so I would just raise that issue.
Sure. And even comparing to last year, you might have a different group of students with different
right.
aptitudes. And so you may be seeing that, honestly. But I that sounds like then it, even if this was raised to the professor, it would also be hard for the professor to assess what was happening.
Yes. I mean, look, it's harder to enforce rules on papers or exams when the students are spread out. There are sophisticated ways to do it. And institutions that normally teach online are very good at it because they have to be. The reality is this year we've had a lot of universities switch to remote learning very quickly.
Mm. Scott Jasek with Inside Higher Ed is talking with us about cheating right now, and your calls are welcome at 800-642-1234. Maybe you're a teacher or a professor. What do you do to limit cheating in your class? Have you changed the way you're teaching when it comes to virtual education, and that's different than what you would have done in a classroom? Maybe you're a student. How prevalent is cheating among your peers, and how do you know? 800-642-1234. There's a line for you at that number, or you can email us, ideas@WPR.org. Robert in Central Wisconsin is on the line now. Hey, Robert.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. What are you thinking about?
Okay, so I've been attending online classes for the last 5 years. I'm in corporate management, and I have no time to go and sit in a classroom, right? I can't guarantee my time for those things. So I have experienced over all of the online courses and how the courses that have always been online prior to COVID, like if you wanted to cheat, and I would say a high 95% of the courses that I've taken, you're really not going to be successful in them. So when, like, by definition, cheating, copying a code and using that, I mean, yes, that of course you're gonna have, whether you have it in class or out of class. But if they design the courses right, my timed tests that I've taken for the last 5 years, if I wanted to get a book out, it isn't going to do me any good. You don't have enough time to go through them.
Yeah, Robert, I think you bring up a couple of different points is what I'm trying to say. Thank you so much for that call. You know, Robert brought up time tests or cheating just being more difficult. And even this idea that if you want to succeed in them, even if you get the grade, then you don't have the knowledge that is intended that you learn by taking the tests and studying. Scott, there are some things that teachers can do in classes to make it, I guess, less optional to cheat.
And there's something really important about that comment. He's been doing online education for, I think he said, 5 years. Mm-hmm. The fact is he's at an institution that has been doing testing or having students submit papers before COVID. It is possible to do this. Where it's more difficult is when institutions quickly start.
Educators say students are more likely to cheat when they're under stress and pressure. How can we assess that when we've got a pandemic and we have switched a lot of kids and young adults to remote learning very quickly?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know the students are under pressure and stress. Everyone is under pressure and stress for these days. So that's a reality. The professors need to talk about it. They need, at the beginning of the course, before there are these incidents with cheating, to talk about what cheating is and why it degrades higher education, and to make the students feel part of this important part of our society, and the teaching process.
We're talking about the rise of cheating during remote learning with Scott Jasek. He's an editor at Inside Higher Ed. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How concerned are you about cheating? Do you think cheating is wrong in every instance, or there are some cases where you think it's okay? Maybe you're seeing the pressure that is building in this pandemic and you can't blame kids for cheating. Or do you think that there has to be something we do so that this doesn't happen and that kids aren't cheating now that sets them up poorly for the future? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. This conversation continues here on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're talking about cheating in school and in college. We've got Scott Jasek, our guest. He is an editor at Inside Higher Ed. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Let us know what you think about cheating and how we should handle it, whether you're a student, a parent, a teacher, anyone, just thinking about what this could mean for us as a community. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. And we've got Mitchell in Cedarburg on the line now. Hey, Mitchell.
Hi.
What are you thinking
Hello?
About? Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. I'm thinking about our culture and how we promote higher education. I feel like, and maybe this is just in middle to upper class, you know, echelons of our society, that kids are forced to feel like they have to go to college. And I almost think that the inclination to cheat amongst college students exists to a higher degree than we might think, even outside of a virtual context, and that we should be thinking a little bit harder about the degree to which we promote higher education to students who simply might be better off in the trades. Because the inclination to cheat suggests not wanting to be there in the first place.
Mitchell, thanks for that take. You know, it's one that sometimes comes up, Scott, this idea that, you know, not everybody should go to a four-year institution, and that's okay. I also have to wonder what you think about that in the context of a pandemic, that maybe you thought that's where you wanted to be, and now things have changed. Would you encourage students to change?
Well, I think students are attending every type of institution. You know, more students start a higher education at a community or technical college. You know, a lot of students go there. And there's cheating there too. You know, and so this problem is not unique to the best known institutions, but you hear about it when it happens at those institutions. But cheating takes place everywhere.
Sure. So those technical or trade schools that Mitchell's talking about, students there are cheating too in some of the similar levels. Do we know that?
Yeah, not necessarily at the same levels, but mm-hmm. they are cheating. And generally, the pressure for students to earn top grades is at 4-year institutions. And is at the most prestigious institutions. So there are differences between 2- and 4-year institutions, but there are cheaters everywhere.
Yeah. We are going to go to Courtney in Madison now. Courtney, what are you thinking about?
Hi, I'm a nursing student. I'm an older nursing student. I'm well into my 30s. And, you know, one of the things that I really struggle with is that I've been a nurse for a long time. I'm getting my bachelor's degree, and a lot of questions that I come up against on tests are memorizing either figures or specific, you know, mathematical things that I would Google if I was actually on the floor with a patient. I would never, you know, jog my memory to know whether this lab value is, you know, off or something. I'd look it up. But I'm being tested on that maybe 50% of all my tests.
Courtney, do you think in those circumstances then that you would consider it cheating if you looked it up on the tests?
You know, I mean, we are very strict about cheating. You'll get thrown out of the program if you get caught at all. But it does frustrate me because you're supposed to be learning a trade, a skill for taking care of people. Mm. And they're teaching you not how to do that, but how to memorize things.
All right. That
will not actually benefit anybody in the long run, because I'm going to look it up when it actually comes to it. I would never risk someone's health remembering something incorrectly.
Yeah. Courtney, thank you for sharing that. And thank you for the work that we do. We really appreciate you being a nurse and helping people right now. Scott, the Wall Street Journal had an article about cheating, and it said some parents aren't okay with cheating if teachers are doing a good job. But if the teacher's just posting assignments and not doing any, like, what they consider real teaching, they think kids should be resourceful and look online or ask friends. What do you think about that?
I disagree with it. I mean, look, if there are many courses where it's totally fine because the professor says it's fine to use all the materials you can get. And so that's not cheating. But if the professor says you can't use certain materials, call me old-fashioned, but I believe that's cheating and that you shouldn't do it.
Do you expect that when we move back to more in-person classes eventually that cheating will go down?
Not really, because cheating is always a problem. And until people, you know, get serious about teaching what is cheating and what is not cheating, I think it will continue.
How do you remind people that cheating hurts students in the long run?
In the long run, you give them examples. You know, and I think one of the questioners said, you know, if you cheat, you don't have that knowledge, and that the knowledge matters. And I'd even say to the nursing student that it's important to know how to look up certain, how to calculate certain kinds of information. You might use a calculator later in life, but you've got to know what it is. And that's just old-fashioned, important education.
That idea that, sure, you might not use algebra every day, but it also teaches you how to think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Scott, we really appreciate your time going over this. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Take care.
Scott Jasek is an editor at Inside Higher Ed. We are talking with him about the rise in cheating among students, especially doing virtual learning, and what colleges, universities, professors are doing about it. WPR and Wisconsin Watch are documenting the lives of Wisconsinites in this unprecedented time with a series of audio diaries called Outbreak Wisconsin. Wisconsin hospitals have started administering coronavirus vaccines. That includes UW Health in Madison, where Mariah Clark is a nurse in the emergency department. She recorded this diary the day she learned she'd be getting the shot.
I just stepped outside after my post-work shower. It is December 17th, and it's nearly 6 a.m. I was about to go to bed, but this warrants noting. So I woke up yesterday morning on the 16th to a text message from one of my supervisors saying that I was scheduled to get my COVID-19 vaccination today. And I was just so excited. Honestly, I knew that we'd be among the first because, you know, emergency ICU and other staff with direct daily patient care of COVID-19 patients would be in the first tier for vaccination. And part of the first bit of the rollout, but I didn't think I would be getting it quite so soon. So I was really excited to get that text message this morning. The science is amazing. The science is fascinating. And I mean, I am excited. I'm excited to help protect my patients and to help protect my family and to help protect myself. But most of all, I'm really happy that this is happening. And I'm happy to be part of history in one of the more significant mass vaccination campaigns of my lifetime. I'm excited to get the fastest developed vaccines in recent history. The last quickest vaccine development was the mumps vaccine, and that took 4 years and was considered remarkable. This took us 1 year. And while mRNA vaccination is new, mRNA vaccine research is not. And I am very comfortable getting this vaccine and hope to be able to be an example that encourages others to do the same when it becomes more and more widely available. And I hope that it means that slowly, gradually, months from now, return to something resembling the normalcy we knew before.
Vaccinated later that day, December 17th. To hear more stories like this one, visit WPR.org/outbreakWisconsin. Coming up after the news, we are having a discussion about television. What were some of your favorite TV shows from this past year? We're going to be talking with a TV critic about some of her favorites, and we'd love to hear from you, too. You can give us a call or you can email us. You can do that at ideas@WPR.org. We'll have the lines open and we'll have a conversation about television in 2020 and what's ahead next year. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina in for Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 6 o'clock on The Morning Show, talking about money with people closest to us can be awkward, even contentious. Learn how to break the ice with a personal finance expert. That's tomorrow, bright and early, here on the Ideas Network. Now, it's the end of the year, quite a year. Let's talk about TV. Through 2020's ups and downs and safer-at-home orders and reopenings, TV remained. Streaming, network, cable, new series, old favorites. We're going to get to some of the best that was available this year, and you are part of this conversation. Call us now at 800-642-1234. What did you watch this year that blew you away, that helped you escape, that sparked your imagination, or maybe helped you heal? What do you recommend watching? Call 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Our guest as we navigate the year that was is Jen Chaney, TV critic at Vulture. Jen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You're a TV critic, but maybe let's just take that cap off for a second. How important a role did TV play for you this year, not as a critic, but as a person?
Gosh, it's so hard to separate the two for me. But I think it was important for me. It was important for everybody. It was really a companion, and it always is to some degree, but it really was especially a needed companion during these times when we had to stay indoors and really weren't able to go out and socialize like we normally would. And it gave us all something to connect with, you know, to the extent that we could talk to each other over Zoom or on the phone. That could become our shared culture, something that we were bonding over, is what we were all stuck inside watching together.
You've got a list, and we're going to get to that and get to a lot of recommendations. But first, what were some of the big misses that you clocked this year?
Well, people are going to get mad at me for this because it was the first like phenomenon, I guess, in the pandemic. But Tiger King, to me, was a miss in the sense that I just didn't think it was that great of a docuseries. Certainly the people in it were fascinating. and it had that sort of, I have to watch this car crash quality to it. And I totally understand why people got sucked into it. But I think somehow along the way, we got confused and thought that it was worthy of Emmy nominations, and it was not. So for me, that was definitely a miss.
All right. Well, the one thing that's nice about television is that we get to have our own opinions and decide. So even if it frustrates people, there might be things on their list that, rise to the top of theirs that you wouldn't choose, or vice versa. Let's get into some of the television that you thought was the best to come out this year. Your ranking is 1 to 10. And at number 5, we've got Pen 15 from Hulu. We've got a clip of the two main characters from Pen 15, and they're middle schoolers who are having a heart-to-heart.
Do you think I've changed?
Who?
Do you think I've changed?
You?
Yeah. Do you?
I think that we all change all the time, and that's just normal.
So you do? You think I've changed, like, in a bad way?
Mostly good. Mostly good.
Oh, my God.
No, mostly good. It was just when we were at the dance, like, you were, like, grinding with just a few more people than me, and
that talking over one another, it brings you right back to middle school. I mean, maybe even now still. What is it about Pen 15 that puts it so high up on your list for the year?
So this was the show's second season, and it's actually split its second season in half because the pandemic forced them to shut down production. So the second half of that season will come in 2021. But the remarkable thing about this show to me is that the two people you just heard talking who created the show, Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle, are in their early 30s playing basically themselves as 12 or 13 year olds. And that sounds ridiculous and like something that would not work at all as a TV show. But it's remarkable how in every episode, I just immediately forget how old they are because they just capture what it feels like. And they're acting opposite kids who are actually that age. So they're the only adults in the room, really. And they just do such a remarkable job with it. And it's really funny. It's a little bit explicit sometimes in some of the things that it explores, but it's also just really poignant and moving. And I think the fact that they are older people playing younger people adds to the poignancy.
We're talking with Jen Chaney, who's a TV critic at Vulture. We're talking about television this year, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you recommend we watch? Or maybe you sat through it and you've decided you want to let other people know they should steer clear of it. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Another one that made your list that we've heard a lot about related to retail sales is The Queen's Gambit. That's number 8 on your list. It's from Netflix. We have seen stories about how chess sets have had rising sales because this is a show that is based around competition and chess. Tell us more about The Queen's Gambit and why it makes your top 10.
So yeah, this is a show on Netflix about a young woman who becomes basically, you know, the premier champion of the chess world. And it goes from the 50s through the 60s. And she is an anomaly, obviously, in that she's a woman in a game that, you know, mostly is dominated by male players. I think a lot of the appeal is in Anya Taylor-Joy, who plays the lead role. And she is a remarkable actress and just so compelling to watch. And I think they also find a way to make chess, which doesn't necessarily sound like the most exciting thing to watch, really interesting and, if I may say, even a little bit sexy. And as a counterpoint to what I said earlier about Tiger King, it has been so gratifying to realize how many people are watching the show. Because when I watched it to review it before it came out, I thought it was really great. But I'm like, I don't know that this is going to be a huge thing that everyone's going to watch because it's a show about chess. And yet, as you said, not only have a lot of people watched it, but people have gotten into chess because of it. And I think that's really great.
Do you have any sense of what pushed people to hit play on that? I mean, I know that when I looked at it on Netflix, I just wasn't super interested. But by the time that the third person told me I needed to watch it, I just sat down and watched it. Is it word of mouth? Is it really good promotion? What pushes us to watch things like that?
Well, I think what you just described is probably the experience that a lot of people had, is that they were either hearing from their friends or they were seeing conversation on social media to such an extent that they thought, well, I guess I should watch this because everybody else is watching it. And then once they actually sat down to do it, I don't know if this was the case for you, but I think people really got drawn into the story And, you know, and it's not a long show. Like it's, you know, not a long season. So you could get through it in a relatively brief period of time. And I think that was part of it too.
Yeah. Looking at your top 10 list, there are, you know, some trends. We see networks like Netflix and Hulu and HBO. Why are these companies doing so well?
I mean, yeah, this has not been a great year for traditional broadcast television. You know, the pandemic slowed things down for them. But I think their programming isn't often as exciting or interesting or intriguing as what we're finding on, you know, the cable networks like HBO or the streaming networks, which seem to be proliferating at a rate that is hard to keep up with. So I feel like that's where everybody is gravitating toward. And that's where a lot of the interesting creative decision-making and the really big chances are being taken is on those kinds of platforms.
Well, you just spoke briefly about, you know, how things are working in the pandemic. What do we know about how television studios were able to make it work in 2020 to still be able to produce television this year?
Yeah, I mean, they had to shut down for a period of time. And toward the end of the summer, more shows started to go back into production, either to finish what they had started or to start on new seasons. So there was this idea at one point that at some point the pipeline was going to just dry up and somehow we would run out of television. That never really happened. I don't know about you, but I never felt at any point like I was running out of things to watch. But I still think there's a little bit of gray area in that, you know, even among the shows that have gone back into production, some of them have had COVID issues, like The Morning Show, the Apple TV Plus show. They had to shut down because they had some COVID cases and had to sort of cease production for a bit. And I know that happened to some other shows. So there's still some question marks about what is going to be back in 2021 and what is not.
Jen Chaney is a TV critic at Vulture. She stays with us as we talk about television this year. There is a line for you at 800-642-1234. What were your TV hits or misses of 2020? Are there shows you're looking forward to watching in the new year? Maybe a series you haven't gotten to. Maybe you're one of those folks who watches the same series over and over, even though you know exactly what's going to happen. Let us know what it is. Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. And we continue this conversation here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking with Jen Chaney from Vulture. She's a TV critic, and we're talking about television in 2020 and also what is ahead in 2021. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's the best or maybe the worst thing that you've watched all year? Give us a call now and weigh in. Ask your question at 800-642-1234. Jen, I want to make sure that we talk about your number one choice for television. We've got a clip here of I May Destroy You, the main character Arabella getting into a car at the end of a visit with her supposed boyfriend.
So, are you going to miss me?
I don't like this sort of conversation.
Doesn't have to be a conversation. Are you going to miss me? Are we boyfriend and girlfriend? Could you say yes?
It's not a conversation. I'm going to call you soon. Thank you. Bella.
So, we'll talk.
Okay.
When?
I don't know. When? When I'm ready to call you, I call. Bye.
Oh, there's some tension there. Why does I May Destroy You top your list, Jen?
So the main premise of this show was created by Michaela Cole, who also stars in it as Arabella. And she's a writer. She goes out to a bar one night and she is drugged without her knowledge, and she's raped, but she cannot remember exactly what happened. She just remembers that occurred. She doesn't remember who did it. And so she's trying to piece together the information and figure that out while also just coming to terms with what actually happened to her. And it's actually based on, you know, things that happened in Michaela Cole's life. So I think there's a really personal element to it that you can feel in every episode. But I also think on a broader level, the show's really looking at, you know, how do you cope with trauma? And how do people kind of move on when they've been in such a difficult situation, and the ways that we kind of mold our truth to suit whatever whatever perspective we bring to it. So I think it was just unlike anything else that I watched this year. And I think that's kind of the high bar that you look for when you're trying to decide what the best thing is. Was there anything else like this? And there just wasn't. I May Destroy You was completely on an island in terms of what it was doing.
It seems so heavy, and that can sometimes be hard to experience over and over again. Are there moments in I May Destroy You that lighten that load a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there's also a really lovely story about friendship in the center of this, particularly between Arabella and her friend Terry, who have known each other since they were, you know, young kids growing up. And there are some lighter moments and some even comedic moments in it. So it's not unbearably heavy, mm-hmm. But it still obviously deals with some heavy subject matter.
Sure. We are talking with Jen Chaney, and we're talking about TV. She's a critic at Vulture. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We've got Joan in Wood County on the line. Hey, Joan.
Yeah, thanks. I'm listening to something or watching something that I never saw before when it originally aired, and it's on Start TV, and it originally aired on Lifetime back in 98 through 2002. And the show is called Any Day Now, and it's about Amy Potts and Toussaint, or can't remember her name. Anyway, it's about a friendship of these two kids, a black woman or a black girl and a white girl, that they're 30 years later now, reconnected, and they have flashbacks. They go back to when they were growing up as kids, starting off at 10 years old. And it deals with so much stuff that was pertinent then, and it's still pertinent now, dealing with death of a child, racism, stalking, poor, you know, family struggling with no money, et cetera, et cetera. Family relationships, suicide of a grandparent.
Wow. Yeah, Joan, there's a lot there. Thank you so much. And I want to get Jen's take on this, because Joan says any day now was on, but I didn't watch it. And now I'm catching up all these years later. That is one opportunity we have with streaming services.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, I mean, there are a lot of shows that have aired on network TV even more recently than that, that then show up on Netflix, and it's like everyone suddenly is like, oh, I'm watching this new show. I'm like, yeah, that came out a year ago. it's as if it doesn't matter until it's on Netflix or until it shows up in one of your streaming services to some extent. But I also think that's great, because it gives some of these shows that maybe were overlooked a few years ago or even many years ago new legs and new life. And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks again, Joan, for the call. We really appreciate it. 800-642-1234. We've got Robert from Wauwatosa ready to join our conversation. Hi, Robert.
Hello. My favorite series really surprised me, because I avoided it. It's Madam Secretary, and I didn't think it would be that great, and I was sick of politics, and started watching it anyway with my wife. And we both really liked it. It has intelligent writing, and it feels realistic. She lives in her own home, so she's at home, and when she's not working, and her husband is very supportive, but at the same time sticks up for himself. And the kids that are in it are. They try to keep them in the dark for some of the stuff that's going on around the world, but they're not able to very, very well. And that produces some conflict, with one of the kids who is older leaving.
Huh. Robert, I'm going to jump in here, because Madam Secretary is one that Robert picked up and said, you know, I don't know if I'd like this thing that's based on someone who's the Secretary of State, and really found that Robert enjoyed it. Jen, do you want to say anything about Madam Secretary, or just that idea in general?
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me of what we were talking about earlier with regard to the Queen's Gambit. Mm-hmm. You know, I think during the pandemic, when maybe people had a little more time on their hands, they were maybe more likely to try something that they wouldn't ordinarily try. I think that applies to a lot of things in our life, not just TV. I've never known more people to make sourdough bread in my life than I saw over the past few months. But I think that's a good thing. It's helping us stay open-minded. I don't watch Madam Secretary, although I've heard some similar things from other people about the way that it handles some of the issues that Robert was talking about. But I do think in some ways we became a little more open to new experiences during this whole process.
We got an email from James in Wisconsin that says, "The Mandalorian!" Exclamation point. As a Star Wars nerd, this show has sent waves of goosebumps coursing over me, made me laugh, cheer, yell, and just totally geek out. And then James also mentions that if you pay close attention, you'll see little Easter eggs tying the different movies and animated series together. Yeah, The Mandalorian is something I hear a lot of people talking about. How about you, Jen?
I love The Mandalorian. I think it's a great show. I think it's one of the best Star Wars stories that we've had since the original trilogy. I mean, who doesn't like Baby Yoda? I mean, everyone loves Baby Yoda. So I love the finale that the season two finale that just showed up on Disney Plus. I am concerned about the amount of Star Wars and also Marvel material that we're about to get in the next year, because they're rolling out just series after series after series. And I worry that it's going to dilute sort of the joy that you get when they don't have so much being thrown at you. But I think The Mandalorian is very well done. I completely agree.
Let's bring Mary from Pewaukee into the conversation. Mary, what's on your television?
Okay, great. Well, I've been watching some Netflix. We just got it this year because of COVID. 7 Seconds, I just finished watching that. And it's several episodes, but I think it was just the one season. And if you want to see a black young person and a white cop, just tearjerker and on the edge of your seat. Very well done. Very good acting. Then I loved Ozark, Dead to Me, which has Christina Applegate and another actress that is just fantastic. I watched You, Y-O-U. That is amazing. Can't wait for that to come back. I sure hope it does. And then The Stranger, another, I think, newer one. So I enjoyed them all so much.
Hey, Mary, thank you so much for adding to our list here as our time is running short with Jen Chaney. And Jen, I need to ask you, after a year like 2020 and headed into 2021, what are your expectations or predictions for the new year in TV?
My prediction is unpredictability. How's that for a prediction? Because
beautifully hedged. Tell me more.
Yeah. I mean, I think looking ahead at the schedule, certainly in January, there are a lot of things we know that are locked in. But as we have a most anticipated of 2021 list that we published. And beyond, say, February, it started to get a little bit murkier in terms of what's coming back when. And I think it's because, you know, the networks are still trying to figure that out themselves. Even some shows that were supposed to come back this year, like Barry, for example, or Atlanta, because of COVID, they're still trying to figure out when they can actually finish production. And so there's question marks around that. So I'm just trying to go with the flow. That's all I can do. I think that's all any of us can do.
I think we will wind up checking in on you as that flow continues. Jen, thank you. Really, we appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Jen Chaney is a TV critic at Vulture, and we talked with her about some of her favorite TV from the past year and also what we're looking forward to in 2021. You can find her list at a link on our website. It's at WPR.org/Central Time. And coming up tomorrow on Central Time, Congress and the President spar over coronavirus relief and defense spending. We'll also talk about why your morning caffeine fix could be at risk. And tomorrow is National Bacon Day. I think you know what we'll be talking about right here on Central Time on the Ideas Network.